Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a queer and Latinx podcast where we talk about
Frozen, or the unwanted short in the beginning of the Coco movie.
Oh my god, how long was it, like 25 minutes?
Something like that. And what was crazy about it, like, I'd heard about it before, you know, I went to go see the movie. I didn't realize that, like, it was gonna come off as so queer.
Oh my, yes, that is like the gayest movie on earth.
Yeah, and it's just like, it could go over your head so easily, but honestly, it was not even something I was looking for.
You weren't looking for queer representation in Sisters?
Exactly, yes. Not. What up, Corona?
What's poppin', Chigona? How you been? How's LA treating you?
It's pretty dope. Pretty dope. No complaints. How's Texas?
It is the same exact weather as California right now, which is really weird. It's like 70 degrees out here. It's ridiculous.
See, the difference is you're actually gonna get some cold weather, and I'm gonna be here, like, in the sun in January.
Okay, don't be okay. All right, slight flex.
I'm not bragging. I like winter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. So, let's talk about Podcasterio Fest.
Yeah, so it's been, what, like 2-3 weeks since Podcasterio?
And by the time this airs, probably a little bit longer, but.
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna put this out pretty quickly, but yeah, I mean, I'm still kind of running off of a slight high from that day.
I am too. It was so unreal for me to be around, like, all these podcasts that I've been listening to meet Babelito. Like, I died.
Yes, he's so adorable. I hung out with him yesterday and we split a carne asada burrito and it was delicious.
Mm. Oh my god.
It was so good.
And getting to see Favi Fav. Oh, I'm so jealous. You got to hang out with, like, our faves.
Yeah, and it was so random because, like, some of my roommates went to Las Vegas and they were like, oh, we should have invited you. And I was just like, oh, it would have been cool to see Favi and Babelito. And then, like, next morning, Babelito and Favi text me, hey, we're going to LA. You want to meet up? So it would have been a misconnection.
It worked out.
Yeah, it was perfect.
That was perfect. Oh, my God. And then who else did we, of course, got to share our table with De Colores because, like, there are, like, gang, like, there are,
yeah,
clique, like, I don't
Dallas
know.
Squad, even though
Dallas Squad.
Yeah, even though I'm here, but I'm still Dallas Squad.
You're still Dallas Squad. We still claim you. And then, oh my God, you know who I really fuck with? Like, Viva La Round Girls and Eric from Stir Online. Like, he's like a Scorpio, and
you like
I don't know
Scorpios?
Why that matters. I love Scorpios, even though I think half of them are evil.
Oh dear. Yeah, they're pretty awesome. I know you were, like, playing board games at the after party with Viva La Round Girls.
I think, like, all the introverts got together at the end and were like, I'm emotionally and socially drained. Do you want to play a board game? And I'm like, fuck yes, I will. You're amazing.
Even though that's kind of social too, but yeah, no, I was, like, tired of sitting down and I wanted to get up and I was just like, I have to go and talk to these people that are going to fly across the country tomorrow because I feel like I should.
No, yeah. Like, everyone has their own thing. Like, you're more social, and I love that. I was just, like, fangirling. Like, I fangirled really hard, and I felt really strange about it afterwards when I met Radio Menea. When I met Perez, I was like, I'm just going to fangirl. And I just, like, hugged her. And I was like, I don't know you, but I'm going to hug you because
yeah.
I listen to everything.
Agreed.
And so, like, yeah, I felt like I was weird. And then I met Vero and I was like, okay, I won't hug you. I won't be weird. But I totally fangirled. I was just like, oh my God. I died.
That's crazy.
It was amazing.
When I found out that Vero had, like, listened to one of our episodes, I died.
Oh, yeah, the Steven Universe episode. We both just kind of like, what just happened right now? This is unreal.
And then just, like, because there's so many podcasts, we can just run through everybody else we met. We met Yvette from Cerebronas, we met all of
yes.
them, right? But, like, we really hung out with, like, Luis. I got to see him, what, last weekend? And there's an episode.
Oh my god, everyone go listen to that conversation. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go listen to that conversation, you guys, with Maite and Luis. And
yeah, I'll talk about it.
Swap meet.
Yeah, I'll talk about it a little bit more whenever my movie that I'm reviewing later comes up. But yeah, Luis was amazing. Café con Pam, we got to party with her a little bit. That was pretty fun.
Oh my, she's super lit. I love her.
Yeah,
she's amazing.
There were so many people there, and
it was just
I'm so glad that it happened, and I'm glad to have met a couple of listeners and a couple of new listeners. Like, they were so great.
It was surreal, wasn't it? To meet people that listen to our podcast, in LA. I was like, wait, what?
And yeah, and then people that know some of my story without knowing them, you know what I mean? But it was
yeah, people were coming up to you and people were coming up to you and talking about oh, you just moved to LA, and someone recognized you, someone recognized me too. It was weird.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. But you know, the life of the party, Latinos Food Lunch, they were amazing.
Ugh, of course. I died. Being near them was all the good energy I needed, but I'm just so socially inept. I'm just kind of oh my god, I'm overwhelmed. I'm gonna be quiet now. So I was oh, I hope I didn't offend anyone. I'm just I get socially awkward and anxiety, and I just get quiet. That's my go-to. I'm just I'm just gonna sit here.
Dude, it's overwhelming, you say that, honestly. But I feel you handled being on the panel way better than I did. I had a mini freak out and I blacked out and I have no idea what happened.
Oh no, dude. I did too. I don't remember the panel.
That's funny.
I remember talking to Eric though. I remember him being a Scorpio, and that's why I was oh my god, I love him. He fed me a lot of good energy during that panel, so I chilled out being next to him. It's his Scorpio energy, that's all.
I liked him, you know, just when he was walking around and talking to us. And I heard his, interview with Latinos Who Lunch, and he was pretty, pretty dope there. Yeah.
He's so good. He's so good at that.
And then our host, which was Perez on the panel, she was just absolutely amazing.
Oh, my God, I melted. I was hi.
Oh, my God. It was really cool being amongst, you know, really great podcasters. I couldn't even believe I was at that table.
Yeah, that was surreal, being at the same table as Radio Manea and Anzal doing it, and Eric was wow, I think I'm doing something right. Obviously, if I'm sitting here near them in their presence, I felt that was enough. It was amazing.
Yeah, they're pretty great. And I don't know what else. I mean, that weekend you just came down for basically 2 days. We went to a bunch of museums, we went to the beach, and then we went to the pre-dinner.
Oh yeah, the pre-dinner.
Which we got to,
we went to the Selena Star, of course. People. Yes, we did. That was amazing.
So yeah, it was just super eventful. It's been a couple of weeks, so our buzz from it died down, but it's still a little bit there.
No, yeah, I'm still there too. I can't wait to go back to LA. I don't know how I feel about the city, because you know, I feel like I got a very jaded, happy view of LA. You know, I got to hang out with, you know, podcasters and Latinx people. So I feel like I only saw a portion of the city, but what I saw was amazing. And I low key fell in love with what I saw, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. But yeah, because that weekend was a particular brand of amazing. Yeah, because I mean, LA normally is just a normal city. Believe it or not.
It's just whatever.
Yeah, I'm just can't really judge with 32 days of being here, but what can I do?
You'll get a feel.
I can't wait for next year. Hopefully we're still going strong, and hopefully it comes back for another year, and I think it will, and I think it'll be bigger and better and just completely amazing.
Oh yeah, I can't wait. I'm so excited for next year. I'm so hype on it. So everybody go listen to everyone we've been recommending on our Instagram. It's literally all of them plus more, but we love all of them, and it was amazing.
Yeah, it was
great. An honor, honestly.
It was, yeah. Okay, well, yeah. Today we're gonna talk about a couple of movies to get into the Christmas spirit. Even though December just started, but whatever, let's do it.
Oh, December is my favorite month, and I love Christmas, so.
Yeah, I mean, normally, you know, I'd be working my ass off during this time of year, so I would be happy to have those few days off, you know, paid holidays. But now it's just like I have every day off. Oh, and at the same time, I have like no days off because I'm always working on something or another. So, yeah, this is gonna be the first year that it's gonna be a weird Christmas.
Oh, but you hopefully are coming back. Shout out to that.
I'm gonna try. We're gonna see.
Tell your mom I'm totally down to take all her pictures again. I'm down.
Oh my god. I forgot about that. She's like, oh, the girl who takes pictures left. I remember that so vividly.
To me, that's like the highest compliment someone can give me, other than like, you're not stupid, is you take good pictures.
That's funny.
Shout out to your mom. She's the best.
Yeah, she'll check in, and every now and then she'll like pretend to be really mad. She'll be like, why haven't you talked to me? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, what? You don't even talk to me this much, like, when I'm in Texas.
Well, you know, like, you were talking about in Nos Vemos in the swap meet, like, you miss it once it's gone, you know? Maybe she just misses you now that, like, you're not in her presence.
I know. I'm going to go back for, like, Christmas, and she's going to be like, can you fucking go back to L.A. already?
That's adorable. I'm sorry. I think that's cute.
But, yeah, so I'm going to talk about Coco, and I'm going to do that last for those of you that don't want to hear anything about it. But for those that do want to hear about it, I'm not going to spoil it for you. For once, I'm not going to spoil it.
What are you going to talk about? You're not going to spoil it? No. I am talking about... Don't? Like, oh, my God. Yeah, because don't spoil it. But maybe like have like what we do, like that minute where we spoil it, you know? Like, I'm down for that 1 minute where we warn them. We're like, okay, for the next 60 seconds, we're going to fangirl.
I might. I don't know. I really don't want to spoil this one because it's pretty special and it's pretty new in the media. But that's, I mean, I'm still going to go and get into the nitty gritty. I'm still going to do it.
Ooh, the nitty gritty of Coco.
So yeah, you're going to talk about Carol first.
Yes.
That's what you consider a Christmas movie.
It's not what I consider a Christmas movie, but it's one of the few queer Christmas movies like out, like existing.
Definitely, which is why I didn't come up with one. Other than Frozen.
Okay. Yeah, other than Frozen, yeah, because that's super Christmas and queer, so everyone go watch it. But, you know. Okay, so following the theme of having, like, the whitest Christmas ever, following Frozen, also comes Carol. Now, Carol's, like, the second whitest queer movie that's actually canonly queer. I have a lot of strong opinions on Carol. It stars Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara. It came out in 2015, the same year that gay marriage was legalized. And it's also like the whitest movie ever made.
It is. I mean, yeah.
Right?
I love it though. I'm not going to lie to you. I love this movie.
Okay, tell me why you love it.
How about we let you tell us what it's about, and then like at the end of it I'll be like, okay, so this is what I like.
Okay, now, so for doing research for this, I actually went back and started listening to the audiobook, and before the movie even came out, I read the book. So this was years ago, because I heard it was one of the only like lesbian books that had like a happy ending, and it was actually written by someone super famous who used an alias name. The original name for it was called The Price of Salt, and it's by Patricia Highsmith. She used an alias back in 1952 to sell her book because, you know, being gay back in the day was super illegal, and having women have a happy ending and in love is even more rare, and also probably super frowned upon, so she had to use an alias for it. And basically, I love that she must have worked in retail, because she, like, wrote a whole, like, fanfic about meeting a MILF. Like, oh, this is what it is. It's like...
That's one way, like, to come look on. At it.
Right? Like, if you worked in, like, retail, and you see, like, some hot, like, mom come in looking super bougie in her fur coat, like, you're bored. You're just working all day. So, of course, you're going to think about, like, oh, wow, what if we hooked up and, like, fell in love? Like, this is that book, okay, guys? If you ever worked retail during Christmas... This is your fanfic book. One of the things that I guess I did like about it was probably the tenderness between the two characters, between Carol and Therese. There's a tenderness there that you don't really get to see in queer media, because the focus isn't on them. The focus is never on queer people, right? So even the little, you know, like the eye contact, the little hand touches, little gestures like that are things that, like, you know, queer people keep an eye out for. And this movie did a really good job of showing those little glances, those little hand touches, those that eye contact from across the room that only you and that other person understand. And only really, like, closeted people can understand, because those little things mean the world when you're in the closet. So this whole story is told from two women who are sort of in the closet, and they have to be because of the time. Because, like, 1952 sucked. Like, morality codes, racism, the way they treated women. Like, it just wasn't a good time to be queer woman or a person of color. And so one of the reasons I didn't like the movie was because of the focus on super white American culture, which I have no interest in. And it's not to say that there's anything wrong with it. I my interest wasn't really there. You know, like, I don't want to see, like, two white ladies in the 1950s, like, the most boring time period I think of American culture. Because the focus wasn't on people of color. And if it was, it was for bad things. So I have feelings about Carol in that way. Now, the movie opens up where they're having, like, a dinner. The movie opens up where the film ends, sort of. There's Carol and Therese having dinner while a man, of course, intrudes in that dinner. And yeah. That happens to be, like, the theme of the movie, right? Like, a dude, like, interrupting two women just trying to love each other. Like, it's annoying. It happens all the time. Like, there's always a man around interrupting two girls just want to be in love. But I did find themes in this movie, like, unrealistic. Like, okay, so Carol's, like, super bougie, wears furs. She has, like, this giant home and, like, this big car in 1952. And Therese is, like, you know, a cashier at, like, I don't know, like, Nordstrom or something. So there's, like, a huge class difference between them. And culturally, I think, like, Carol's way more, like, cultured, well-read and traveled. And, like, Therese is, like, super young. And she hasn't really done anything yet. She's still, like, she's 19 in the book and in the, I don't know if in the movie she's 19, but she's 19, period, point blank. And Carol's supposed to be 32 and all of these amazing things. So I didn't find that realistic. And what I actually liked more about the movie was the relationship between Carol and her ex-girlfriend, Abby. She's played by Sarah Paulson, another favorite queer of ours.
Yes, an actual queer woman.
An actual queer woman, right? Like, openly queer. What I actually liked about them was their relationship. They had a real friendship. And when anything happened in Carol's life that seemed a little, like, fucked up, rocky, she would call Abby and tell her everything while Therese is sitting right next to her. And she has this opportunity to have a conversation with Therese, and she doesn't. So I'm just confused by their relationship. I'm confused by the time period. Like, this story just seemed super fanficky. Like, like, I didn't see these two people actually happening in reality. Carol has this, like, bougie way of being that Therese is just, like, this quiet girl who doesn't really know who she is yet. So I'm kind of confused by their love for each other, because I can get how you can adore Carol, you know, I get it, and I get how you can adore Therese. Like, they both have their things about them. Therese is quiet and, like, you know, she seems meek, but she's not. Like, she seems one of those, like, there's a storm happening inside her, but she's not letting it out. So I'm really into that. I'm really into quiet people, but I just didn't understand their attraction to each other. I didn't feel any of the tension there. I understood their glances. I understood the little things they were doing to communicate with each other to say, hey, I like you. I'm like you. We're both queer. But I didn't see it for them. Did you see it for them?
I mean, there's several factors that kind of go into that, because you got to think about it, like, during this time period, you don't just find queer people, like, they're not just out there for you to see, like you said, it's, like, these little things that they noticed about each other, these little glances, these little hand touches, like, without that, you know, like, they wouldn't have known anything, right? So it's just kind of, like, it could be, like, genuine, like, they were into each other, but it could also be there's not really anybody else, you know what I mean?
True, but like I felt like Carol's connection to Abby was more real because they talked all the time and they laughed together, and I felt like Carol and Therese didn't really like laugh enough together, you know? Like I didn't feel like they even talked to each other that much. I understood their attraction to each other because they were, you know, they went on a road trip together, guys. They Okay, so like every queer girl or anybody, period, wants to go on a road trip with their bae, you know? But like I felt like all they did was like sleep in the car and they didn't really talk, or maybe like even in the book, there wasn't a lot of conversation happening between Carol and Therese. Like they would say small things to each other, but it wasn't like I didn't understand their like attraction to each other other than the physical. 'Cause to me, I'm thinking, okay, yeah, you don't really need to talk to your boo thing if you just want to smash. But like if you like you're in love with someone, hopefully you're having a conversation at some point. And in the movie, there isn't a lot of conversation between them, just glances and small touches. And I get it. They even shot most of the movie like through windows and mirrors. You were never really getting a direct shot of Carol Therese. Like there was always a barrier in front of you. And that's another thing that put me off about this movie was that I felt it was made for like old white Hollywood, which I get it. They're the people who vote for the Oscars, they're the people who do that. But it was very obvious to me that it was, it felt, you know, it felt like some like Clip Notes version of like what love is, you know? Like I felt like they made it digestible for, and I understand it was written in 1950, it was a super closeted, super messed up time in American history, as it continues to be, but the way it was written even felt like deeply, deeply in a closet. And I guess I just, now that I'm super out of my closet, like I don't want to think about how repressed it really is and how suffocating it can be to be in that, like, be in that closet. So this book felt really, really stifling and controlled, and everyone felt like they were on the lookout. And I imagine that's what it felt like for queer people in 1952. Like it was stifling, it felt repressive, like you couldn't breathe, you couldn't express yourself in fear of losing your child. And that's the subplot of this movie, is Carol losing her child because she's queer. And one of the best parts in the movie doesn't even involve Therese and Carol's love story. It's more about Carol's love for her daughter and how she's willing to like give up custody so that she doesn't fuck up her daughter. Because, you know, going through a divorce and trying to like, no, Carol's really cool about losing custody of her daughter as long as she gets to see her sometimes. Because she's like, what good am I to my daughter if I can't be myself? And I find that completely, that's one of the most freeing scenes in the movie. One of the most honest scenes in the movie is when Carol is just like, what good am I if I can't be myself? She's like, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to pretend to be straight so I can keep custody of my daughter. I'm going to be myself. And so she does. And she gives up custody of her daughter to Harge, her bitter ex-husband, which he has a right to be bitter. Like she kind of like lied to him and cheated on him for a while, so that wasn't Gucci. But that was the most powerful scene to me. It was when they were getting that divorce. Do you remember that scene, Maitha?
Vaguely, yeah.
I don't know. To me, that scene meant more, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, do you think, because like while you were kind of talking about like what you felt was wrong with it, in my head I'm thinking like, okay, so this was a story about a woman who, or two women really, who are closeted and struggling with that in their own way, and they themselves feel stifled, they themselves feel like in this box. So kind of in a way, it seems like the movie kind of achieved what it was, what it meant to do. It was meant to make you feel that way too. You know what I mean? Like you're not, you know, free to be yourself in this particular society in this point in time.
No, yeah, it achieved that very well. But I also didn't understand their connection. I mean, you're right. Like, I totally agree. Like, I'm beginning to get a fraction of what it felt like to be queer when, like, you could have been murdered. I mean, you still can be murdered for being queer now. That really hasn't changed.
Or
But
losing your
society's.
kid, like that's pretty bad
You
too.
lose. I mean, in the state of Texas, honestly, it's really bad, Maitha. In the state of Texas, it's
No,
really
yeah, even
bad.
now, but back then,
I'm, like,
like
currently.
Jesus. But
Yeah,
back then,
back
like
then, I mean,
that's
you couldn't even get a
crazy.
job. Yeah. Oh, I mean, in Texas, honestly, you can lose your job for being queer still. So, I
Yeah, but
don't
it's
think
just
much
kind of
has
like
changed.
it's just to the extent, you know what I mean? Like here, like, yeah, like in Texas, it can happen, but it usually doesn't. And
they're still trying it. They're
I
still
mean,
trying
yeah,
it
of
in
course they're
Texas.
trying it,
Like,
but they're
it's
just failing
really
a
bad
lot
in
more.
Texas still.
Like we have a resistance now. We have people backing us up.
Yes, back then they definitely didn't have any kind of resources or people on their side. So, I mean, I like that part of it where she's saying she's being really brave in that moment and saying, you know, fuck it. Like, I'm gonna lose full custody of my daughter. I'm not gonna fight anymore. I'm not gonna break her heart in that way, you know? And she apologizes to him, you know? And she's like, yeah, you know, I made mistakes. I shouldn't have cheated on you, obviously, but you're a controlling ass douchebag who we should have probably never been married in the first place. But, you know, things fall apart. And I think that was another point of the movie is that things fall apart. And Therese was too young to really understand that concept that some things just fuck up and you cannot fix them. And there was a lot of that happening. And Carol was going through a very different period in her life than Therese. Therese was starting her life. She's in the movie, she's a photographer and she's starting her career as a photographer. And Carol's at a different point. She's losing, you know, her daughter. She's losing her family and it's getting taken away from her because of her queerness. And Therese doesn't really have that much to lose and Carol is losing everything. So they're in very different parts of their lives, but in the end, they meet up again. You know, they, as the movie goes, as the letter to Carol. The letter Carol wrote to Therese ends, she says something like, our lives are, everything will come full circle. And it kind of did at the end. Like they met up again and she's like, fuck it. Like I want this with you. Let's just do it. And that was another very powerful scene of the movie, like of any movie I've seen, is that like two women are actually saying, hey, fuck 1952, fuck repressive US misogyny, all this bullshit. We're just gonna be together and we're gonna try to make it work. Like, yeah, I lost my daughter, but I can't lose myself. And that might be seen as selfish, but I can definitely understand it that she's trying her best and this is what she gets. You know, this is the best she can get and she's gonna make the most of it. And that's shout out to Carol for taking that giant risk in 1952. And so I guess I don't hate the movie. It's there's a thing there's things I find problematic super about it, like super problematic about it, but overall I'm gonna give it like three conchas because I don't hate it, but for a Christmas queer movie to exist period, yeah, they're really white, yeah, they're bland and boring, and I almost fell asleep during it watching it again, but I'm gonna give it like three pan dulces. Like it's not that bad, it's not that good, but if you want a queer movie with a happy ending and a boring middle, this is your movie, you know? That's the best I can do. Like a three pan dulces. But fuck it. Watch this
Well,
shit. Get your queer shit.
one of the things that I liked about it is that in most stories, especially like based in the past, or usually it's like, you know, oh, like, oh, you discover that this woman was queer, but she had to give up everything and she ended up with like a family and she faked it her whole life. Like, that's the kind of story that you usually get. Like, Carol in most other stories is the person that sacrificed herself and just was a mom and was in a miserable marriage. So in this story, like, they don't do that. So for that reason, I'm only gonna give it one cafecito.
One guy was that's not like that's not a bad rating, honestly.
Yeah,
That's a pretty good rating. That's
cause
a
it
pretty high rating for you.
yeah, it's not bad. Just cause like it yeah, it's kind of boring and it's definitely white, but it's just it's still like it achieved what it, you know, what it meant to achieve, you know what I mean? This was a story about being closeted and the sacrifices you had to make, and not, you know, in this particular movie it could have gone way more tragic, like Brokeback Mountain, you know what I mean? They could have killed them both at the end, but it didn't do that, and I found that to be like enlightening.
No, agreed.
It's like, wow, you
Agreed.
don't have to
Completely
fuck
agreed.
everything up.
Yeah, I mean, Carol still lost a lot, but she gained herself. Like, that was so powerful at the end where she was like, fuck it. Like, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to pretend to be anyone else. And that was, to me, the center of the story is the love story between her, herself, her self-love, and the love she has for her family. I think that was what I took away more than the relationship between Therese and Carol. because I didn't get that. Other than, you know, they wanted to smash, you know, like I understood more of her family relationship and her self-love. That was powerful to me.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, now we're going to talk about the movie everyone's been watching.
De Coco. So yeah, I mean, I watched it, man, like almost a week ago, and
mm-hmm. when it came, like, out.
No, I watched a little later. It took me a little bit, but still, it was like, you know, I'd heard so many things on Twitter. I mean, you go on Twitter, you're gonna get something spoiled for you, and something something crazy happened. It didn't get spoiled for me. So I was able to
shocking
go. Yeah. And because of my, you know, my appreciation, I'm gonna just go ahead and return the favor and not spoil this for anybody else. But if you don't want to listen to my rant on Coco and you want to, like, go ahead and log off this podcast, you know, because whatever, just go ahead and I'm just gonna go ahead and tell you guys now. Go follow us on all the social medias. Go to CYC Podcast.
Yes.
And rate and review us, because I'm not spoiling it, so you should be pretty stoked about that.
5 stars only for not spoiling Coco for you guys.
Yeah. Okay. So Coco, unfortunately, made me cry. I'm still pretty upset about that, because that's not something that I do. It's just not a... Like, I didn't know that, you know, like, the tear ducts were still intact in there, but there they are. But yeah,
you guys might that has feelings.
no, just tear ducts. It's different. But yeah, so it was made by Pixar, and this has been like an ongoing project for years. It's been like a long time coming, and what we kind of talked about and touched upon on Nos Vemos en el Swap Meet, if you want to go listen to that one. He named it Nos Vemos en los Tacos, and we talked about Coco and a few other things. But what Luis brought up was that when they were just basically in the beginning stages, this movie was called Dia de los Muertos. And they
gross.
No, I mean, that's not gross. That's fine. That's a good name. But the problem with that was that they were trying to, like, trademark that title. They were trying to make Dia de los Muertos property of this big company, and that's what really sparked like a anger in our community. And so there was a protest kind of based in LA against it, and I think, even though of course it was horrible that they were trying to do that in the first place, it's a good thing that it happened, because that caused the creators to be a lot more sensitive and try to be authentic in their storytelling, because otherwise they would have been super basic about it. They would have been like, you know, oh, this is Mexicans, and they would have probably gotten a bunch of white actors with like fake accents, you know, like,
oh god.
Because after that controversy, they went and got major actual Latinx actors, including Gael Garcia Bernal, like huge actors who are definitely
man.
Yeah, he's Mexican, like proud as hell about it. So it was really cool that, or, you know, that something good came out of them trying to do a really shitty thing. So, yeah. So, real quick, let's just get into the Frozen short, which we talked about a little bit earlier. Sparked a fury. Yeah. Sparked this
dude,
pure
did you know
anger.
That? Did you know that in Mexico, so many people were requesting them to remove it, that they actually did remove the Frozen short before the movie?
Dude, they, like, even here, it was just recently announced, they're removing it here, too, starting December 7th, if I'm not mistaken, which might be whenever this comes out. So, yeah, as of today, when this episode is posted, they no longer have this Frozen short in front of it. So, every one of you that's going to see this movie after you hear this, or today, you are one lucky bastard.
We envy you.
Yeah. Because I was sitting there, and I actually liked the original Frozen movie. Like, once, like I said, I totally read Elsa is queer, and then this Frozen short made me read them both as queer. So I enjoyed that movie. I didn't dislike it. So I was just like, damn, that sucks that they, like, are putting this, the whitest thing ever, in this very amazing, or what's supposed to be an amazing movie. But I was just like, maybe I'll like it. Like, whatever, maybe I'll like the short. And then I watched it, and that was 23 minutes of boring ass songs with this fucking snowman. I swear to God.
Oh my God.
It was so bad. Like, the whole time, I was just like, can you guys just get your shit together? Like, I don't know, go, like, what the snowman did, going out in the town with, like, whatever these, the neighbors and stuff like that. Like, Elsa and Anna could have done that. Like, done. I don't know. It would have been a 5-minute short.
It would have.
Yeah.
And it would have been way better.
Probably. So, yeah, I mean, if you watch the trailer, you pretty much know what this is about. Like, Coco is about this little boy who a lot of people, including myself, kind of related to, because he's kind of, like, going against his family in a way. Like, he wants to be a musician, and his family has a long history of hating musicians. Like, honestly, that's probably the most unique thing ever, because every Mexican that I know loves music. Like, all of them. Like, can you think of one that's just like, no, music's not for me? Like, I can't think of any. And then on my dad's side of the family, everyone, or actually what's kind of weird is all my male cousins, they all play instruments, and the girl ones don't. But I was like going against the grain and wanted to play music too, so I started learning guitar at an early age because I wanted to be like them, you know. So I was really excited to watch this movie. I was like, hell yeah, like a musician who people don't believe in, or people don't want him to do what he wants. You can read that in several ways. Like, it doesn't just have to be music. Like, your family typically has something against something or another that you want to do. Like, for me, it's pursuing a career in this industry. Like, they were like, no, don't do that, that's stupid. So everybody has their thing, and they can relate to it.
Well, like, Latinos don't really see, they don't necessarily understand the arts in the same way. Well, not all Latinos. Like, in the family, you know, your parents always want you to do something like, be a doctor, be a lawyer, not a writer. They don't understand the value in art, and you do.
I think they see the beauty in it because, you know, they consume it and they love it. They just don't see it as practical. And for many generations, for some of our families, everything has been about surviving and making music, making art, writing. Like, none of that is going to help you survive, you know what I mean? So that's
but it's like, how they look at it. That's the opposite. Yeah, but that's like the opposite. I feel like art is the reason, like, to live, and you do all this other shit to survive, but art is the thing that makes life beautiful. So
yeah,
I agree with you.
It's just perspective. But yeah, so this kid Miguel, he is like the biggest fan ever of this huge musician called Ernesto de la Cruz. So he, you know, he fashions his whole life around him. He, like, learns his songs, and he learns them really well out of this, like, homemade guitar, which is pretty dope. Like, how do you do that? I can barely get my regular guitar to work. There's, like, I don't know, that his family, they have, like, a whole backstory. I'm not going to, like, go in super detail about it, but they have a whole backstory about why his family doesn't like music, and a lot of it has to do with Coco. Coco in this story is Miguel's great grandmother, I believe. Yeah, great grandmother. So she's she's getting up there. She's old, you know, and it's beautifully, beautifully created, where you see like every wrinkle in her face, and she looks like a real Mexican old woman. You know what I mean? Like, this is what you see if we make it that long. And it's beautiful.
She's
it's
so
absolutely
cute.
Yeah, completely adorable. So she is Coco, and she's like, at first you're wondering, like, this is about Miguel, this is about music, this is about El Día de los Muertos, so why is it called Coco? And I'm not going to spoil why it's called Coco, but it ends up bringing such an appreciation to, like, your elders, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's a big thing in Mexican culture, too. Like, respect for your elders, for your abuela.
It is, yeah. And I think, like, at the beginning of the movie, he sort of dismisses like the importance of his ancestors, and maybe even a little bit like he dismisses his grandmother, who, I'm not gonna lie, his grandma like pissed me off. She made me so angry.
Yeah, she's like too real. She's too real. It's like it feels like you're really watching, like, well, I don't have abuelas, but I imagine that's what that would make me mad.
See, it made me mad because, like, I had the sweetest, nicest, most amazing grandmother, like, ever. She was just the kindest person. I don't know how my mom came out of her type of person. She's amazing.
Oh, my God.
So when I saw his grandmother, I was like, why is she so mean? This is horrible. But, yeah, so the grandmother did make me pretty mad. But the mom and the dad and his dad, they didn't really have much of a part to play in this. Like, they were just busy. As it is, you know, it's something sometimes like that whenever you have multiple kids and you have to work for a living. Like, you can't always pay attention to all of your kids, you know. So Miguel was kind of on his own a lot, and I related to that as well. Because my mom and my and my dad, like, they kind of, you know, had other things to worry about as adults do. So he was left to his own devices and would just, like, go off and go to his little village and try everything he can to be a musician. That's what he wants. It's his dream and he loves it. So he, like, to put it in a vague way, he fucks around and gets, like, thrown into, like, another, like, the not the, I guess not the underworld, but it's like,
no, the afterlife.
Yeah, like the afterlife, where
after party.
Yeah. So he gets thrown into there and ends up meeting a lot of his family members who are shown earlier in the ofrenda, the little altar where they put pictures up of their ancestors so that they can come and visit the living world, basically, on El Día de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead. So he ends up having to go over there and see them. So, plot twist. Which is not even the main plot twist. Yeah, not even the main plot twist. But he goes in there and he explores around and he tries to find Ernesto de la Vega, or is that his name? Ernesto?
Ernesto de la Cruz?
Cruz. There
Ernesto?
You go. Yeah.
De la Cruz.
De la Vega. I'm thinking of, like, that guy from Jane the Virgin. But yeah, so he goes in there and he has his dog, and you get to see, like, so many amazing parts of, like, Mexican culture, stuff that even I haven't really seen a whole lot living here in America, you know. And even when I spent my Christmases, a lot of my Christmases in Mexico, or even my summers, like, it's not something that I ever got to see because I wasn't typically there for Dia de los Muertos. So it was amazing to get to kind of learn the history of it, even me, who, that, you know, I am Mexican. So that was pretty dope, and I got to see, like, the crazy decor, which was kind of cool, like, because we're recently at Podcasterio Fest, and a lot of the stuff that I saw for sale, or, like, the kind of decor that they had on there was very similar to the stuff in Coco, and I was like, well, that's so cool, like, here in LA, I'm finding a lot more stuff like that.
Well, yeah, like, I like that, too, but Coco, if you don't mind me saying, there's, like, different customs in Mexico and different, like, indigenous groups that were part of this, like, culture. So I feel like that's centralized to, like, Oaxaca. Because, like, my family and even my mom told me that I never really seen, like, an altar like that before, because my mom's from, like, a northern part of Mexico. And I guess they were probably, like, colonized by different Spanish, and there are different indigenous groups there. So her practices are probably a very different from that of Coco. So I was super, it was very new to me, because my mom's customs and the customs of maybe, like, Guanajuato and Oaxaca are very different from northern Mexico. So all of this was very new for me, because I'd never even seen an altar, participated in altar building until now, where I see it in college, you know. it's very different.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, because my family's from northern Mexico too, so they kind of celebrated, but, like, not to the highest extent, to say the least. So yeah, but it was still really nice to see, because it's still, like, your country, you know what I mean? It's still beautiful. It's something I can definitely appreciate. And then music being a part of your life like that, like, I could appreciate that too. So yeah, so he goes in there and he ends up on this journey, and he sees like spirit guides, and spirit guides was great to kind of see put into this animated world, if you will. Yeah, what else? I'm trying to like not spoil it. It's really hard to do that.
Can you talk about Frida? I don't think that's like a spoiler.
Oh yeah, that's not
Frida's a spoiler. Like so funny.
Yeah, because like that's an easy thing to talk about. It's just the various elements in it. So spirit guides is one of the things. They're so colorful and beautiful, and everybody's is different, including Miguel's, who has a surprise spirit guide. But I won't talk about that. but yeah, so
that was so cute.
It was. But yeah, Frida's in it, and I like how they didn't, they did and they didn't make her this otherworldly, you know, creature, you know what I mean? Like, she was this person who, like, was really into herself, you know what I mean? She did a lot of self-portraits, and then even in her work that she's doing in the you know, the world of the dead, like, even there, she's kind of doing stuff that's based on herself. She recreates herself through it, so it's pretty cool.
That was so real.
Yeah, so it was funny, and it was cool to see her there. And then they even, I'm not gonna like say who, but they even had a little bit of drag in it, if you recall that.
Oh yeah, they definitely did have drag in it. That was cool.
Yeah, look at me finding the queer and everything. But yeah, so
I'm sorry, go.
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, basically what I can say without spoiling it is just like how it makes you feel, right? So yeah, I mean, it just made me cry like a little bitch. And it shouldn't have. How did you feel about it?
I didn't cry at the part that everyone else cried. I cried before, when the explanation of the name of the movie was like, oh okay, this is all coming together. When they fell into that pool, I'm not going to spoil it, but when they fell into that pool and they had that conversation, Miguel had that conversation with the guy who looks kind of like Cantinflas, but he's not.
with the Gael García Bernal's character?
Yeah, Gael García Bernal's character. They have that conversation. That's when I was like, thug tear, I'm not letting it out. I teared up, but I didn't cry. And it was so sweet. Dude, did you see the Cantinflas in there? And did you see the Pedro Infante and the, like, I just love seeing, like, old Mexican singers and old Mexican actors being acknowledged. It was so cool to me.
That is really cool. I mean, honestly, I know people have been saying, like, oh, they cried whenever they realized this or that. But I think there was multiple parts of the story where you cry.
Yeah,
not
for
just
sure.
The one, right? Like, there's, like, a realization that Miguel thinks he has, but then it's not really a realization. Oh. Like,
yeah,
like during that part, like, or whenever he feels like super accepted, that was kind of tearing up. There was another part where he has another realization, and it's like you get to see the backstory of Gael García Bernal's character. That stuff made me cry like a little bitch. And then
that
the
was
Coco,
oh my god,
yeah. And then the Coco part,
the Coco
as
explanation.
Well. Yeah, there's several points of the story. It's not just one point, like, that kind of get you really emotional. There's several. There's, I mean, Coco was the main one for me. That was the one where I really couldn't hold it back. But I mean, that wasn't the only point for sure, because it was just kind of like he starts playing the guitar for his grandmother. I don't think that's much of a spoiler, but he starts playing the guitar for her, and I was just like, damn, what I would give to do that, what I would give to be able to do something like that.
Aww, so that's really sweet.
So that's what got to me. It's so hard to talk about this without spoiling, guys. You guys better appreciate this.
No, I mean, and I feel like it centers on something that, like, I'm not speaking for all Latinos, but Mexicans feel a very strong connection to, is, like, their family. And centering this around family made it very, very real. Because a lot of Mexican culture is, you know, it's matriarchal. It's not patriarchal. You know, La Virgen de Guadalupe, the way that people regard their own mothers, even when they're not good mothers, you know, you regard them in a certain way. And one of the biggest insults you can say to someone in Spanish is chinga tu madre. It's not chinga tu padre. Like, it's like, fuck your mom, you know, like, that's the biggest insult. So I felt like they really centered this around women, and they centered around the love that we have for the women in our family. And that was really cool for me.
Yeah, that's dope that they definitely concentrated on that. They did not in any way, shape, or form bring up the fact that machismo exists in Mexico really pretty badly, and as well as here. Oh, God, yeah. But, I mean, this wasn't meant to be that kind of a movie, so I suppose it works, you know, because it is for kids who are learning about a culture. You're not going to go out and bring in the fact that, you know, domestic violence is huge over there, so...
Oh, that's huge across all cultures, though. I mean, just yeah, Latinos sure. have that stereotype because white people put it on them. But white people, everyone else, they have the same problem.
Yeah, we definitely have...
They created the stereotype. Yeah, they created the stereotype, not us.
Yeah, but nevertheless, I mean, machismo is super real over there, like, and it's embedded in parts of culture that are not as embedded here anymore. Not that that... makes America has other issues that are worse than Mexico, so whatever. But yeah, it's not a negative movie.
I have a question for you, though. Do you have any criticisms for it?
Well, I think it did what it set out to do, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, you know, it has the culture and it has the visuals in the background. I will say, like, Dia de los Muertos and that culture is not the main story. Like, the story is about Miguel and his family, right? It's just, you know, like, yeah, it's super awesome to be represented, but at the end of the day, this movie is more about, like, the secrets in his family and valuing family, and not so much about, like, Mexican culture, like it kind of claims.
Yeah, it's not a catch-all for all Mexican experiences or Dia de los Difuntos, I think. Because for my history of it, it's different for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the only thing I will say. Like, don't go here thinking you're going to see every part of your culture. You know what I mean? Like, this is at the end of the day, is a story about a kid and his family.
Correct.
So. But yeah, no cafecitos. It made me cry and I'm pissed.
Maite has feelings, you guys. How rare. How shocking. No, I think I have one criticism for it.
What's your criticism?
No, my criticism is that, like, I wish they had played more songs that weren't original. Like, I wanted to, like, hear, like, some Pedro Infante. Like, I wanted to hear some, who's the guy who sang El Rey? You know, like, I wanted to hear some cello. Like, I wanted to hear more, like, songs that I found familiar instead of original Disney songs. Like, that's cool, but, you know, I want to hear some gente. Like, I want to hear something that, like, you know, de colores. I want to hear de colores. Like, I have a very specific sound, some Agustin Laura, like, something different, you know? And I heard English, which is cool, I guess, because there's different ways to encompass this giant thing. We're not a monolith, you know, like you said. And so that's my only criticism. I wanted different songs.
Yeah, I get that. I think it'd be cool, like, now with this movie out, what we kind of mentioned as well as Nos Vemos is that hopefully this kind of sparks an interest in executives and in creators to allow these kind of movies to be made with a lot of funding, you know what I mean? So maybe something like, what is that one fucking, there's like one kids movie that my nephew made me watch the other day about, like, trolls. What? I think it's called Trolls or something like that.
Box Trolls?
No, just Trolls. That's like a kid's movie.
Yeah.
But what they did is a lot of covers of, like, current pop songs and some older pop songs. And I'm just like, maybe mm-hmm. if they did another kid's movie like that, where they could do covers of, you know, old songs that you like or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, I can, like, even in Frozen and other movies like that, they always have original music.
So yeah, and they're not like Lion King, you know.
Yeah.
No, so, I mean, it was good.
Yeah, it was, yeah. And then I kind of want to go back and watch the Spanish dub version of it, because I watched the English dub version of it.
And maybe the songs would be better.
Yeah, in Spanish. That's what I'm
thinking. One of the things that I appreciated is that Natalia Lafourcade did the outro song with Miguel, and I didn't really care about Miguel's part, but once Natalia came on, I was like, oh, I'm living for this song now. It is suddenly so much better. And it's no shade to Miguel. I love him, and his new album is fire, but I don't know, Natalia Lafourcade's song is just, I don't know, it sounded better to me. So well, I guess I would give that movie, I give it like 4.8 pan dulces, just because I'm taking away for the songs. That's it.
That's it. Okay. All right. Well, then there you go, guys. You guys should be watching Coco if you haven't already. You probably have, honestly. We need to go out there and make this movie like big so that everybody who is a money-mongering executive can be like, okay, yeah, that's fine. We can make more movies about Latinos. And then we could see
more of those. Well, Latinos are... Yeah, Latinos are one of the most loyal, like, moviegoers ever. Like, there's some statistic out saying that, like, we're the highest, like, the biggest portion of people watching movies is Latinos. So, like, fuck it. Like, make more movies with different kinds of Latinos, not just Mexicans, you know? Like, I want to see Afro-Latinos, I want to see Cubans, I want to see South Americans. Everyone has a different story, and I always want to see a different story. Not just Mexican stories. And this one is completely different from my own experience of Mexico. So we're not just a monolith.
Northern,
you know?
Mexico.
Yeah, or Northern Mexican experience is very different. And also we're Chicanas, and there's just so much there.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to do other than Dia de los Muertos. So I'm excited to see what comes out of this, if anything.
Yeah. And also, like, I grew up calling it Dia de los Difuntos. Like, I didn't know... I thought Dia de los Muertos was something like white people said, because my understanding of it and my history of it was always my mom saying that. So, you know, it's very complicated, our history, you know?
Yeah, for sure. All right, well.
But yeah.
This has been like, this is like the first time we've recorded in a month. So hopefully.
Yeah. And we're not in person.
Yeah, it's our first, like, what do you call it? Like, long distance recording. Hopefully it doesn't come out horrible.
Are we in a long-distance relationship now, Maita? I think we are.
No. Anyway.
You're like, no, I don't claim you. And I'm like, I claim you. All right, anyways. Guys. Yeah, look at her. She's just like brushing it off.
I was coughing.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right.
But yeah, so it's hopefully, I don't know. I'm kind of trying to get myself inspired to start writing more stuff. And I mean, you know me, the only thing I write about is people of color. So I don't know.
Yes. Yes. I'm hoping it inspires
other creators. I need other creators to back me up here. Like, let's keep doing this shit. Once again, to all LA people, like, hit me up because I'm bored as shit sometimes. And hopefully I get to go home soon and see my people. And yeah.
Yay!
Hope everybody has a good Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, you guys.
Yeah, it's gonna be a little early. It's early, but yeah, it's... I mean, we still have a few more episodes that were pre-recorded when I was still in Dallas. Those are coming up next. We have some good ones for you, though. They're really fucking good. And after that, we'll have current episodes coming out more frequently. And yeah.
We love you guys.
Closing statements?
I don't, other than rate, follow, subscribe. At CYC Podcast.
Yes, it's so important for you guys to rate us, and even better, to review us on iTunes. That makes our day. And we're on CYC Podcast on most social media. And you can email us about anything you want us to talk about or to talk to us about on cycpodcastmail@gmail.com.
Yeah. And 5 stars. 5 stars only.
5 stars would be great. I saw that there's 1 4-star rating there. I saw it. Just one.
We saw that 4-star rating.
No, it's fine. But anyways, yeah, I think this is it.
Bye, chingona.
Bajo.
Fuck it.